Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Because I was thinking, right, you know, it was like a 7 or 8 o'clock gig. So I was thinking, she'll be all right. She'll be able to stay awake. She'll enjoy. And I could see her as Marty Pelo's, you know, singing Love Is All Around. She was beginning to look a little bit drowsy.
Hello, I'm Dave Berry, and 3.5 years ago, my daughter Evie was born, as was this podcast, My Dad Pod. And over the years, it has given me a great excuse to speak to a range of interesting people about their interesting lives, and of course, a bit about parenting. And this time out, I'm joined by a singer-songwriter and frontman of chart-topping, Brit Award-winning band Keane. He is also a father of two. It's Tom Chaplin. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Dave.
Welcome along to the Dad Pod.
I'm very excited to be here.
Something I'd like to start by asking, it's become a bit of a fascination with me when I've been fortunate enough to speak to musicians and songwriters. It's about how creative you were during the pandemic / lockdown. Because I, very early on in all of this, I spoke to Paul Weller.
Right. Yep.
And he'd written like 100 albums and he'd recorded them all and they're all ready to go and he's going to drip feed them to us over the coming years. I spoke to Serge from Kasabian who said he felt totally bereft of any kind of creativity and he spent his time building dens with his kids is what he said.
Nice.
So what about you, Tom? Where did you fall?
Well, initially I wasn't very creative at all. Well, I suppose in a fathering sense, quite creative. So when... my wife was about, 7 or 8 months pregnant when the March lockdown hit.
Okay.
So
many, your son was born in 2020?
He was. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So in many ways, you know, lockdown was kind of fortuitous for me as a dad because I was able to just be at home. And it was that lovely spring, you know, the weather was gorgeous. Yeah. We were down in the countryside and I was able to be there 24/7, which was... really lovely, and particularly just sort of helping out more than anything else with the...
So even if you tried to sneak off to go and pen a ditty, your partner wasn't going to let that slide?
No. Well, the thing was, as it, you know, it sort of rumbled on a lot longer than we all hoped, didn't
it? Yes, true.
And as it did, I think that I did start to feel quite reflective, and I did want to start writing. And so during that period, I started to write more and more and more. And suddenly this, a whole flood of songs came out of me sort of during the sort of latter half of the pandemic.
Right, okay. Yeah. So there's new music to come at some point.
There is, yes, new solo music.
Oh, very exciting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned there, you know, a great time to kind of be at home with a newborn and be a parent, and it's such a special time. With your daughter, who was born in 2014, and Evie was too young, really, but we got a small sense of that, the panic surrounding, you know, how, you know, her social skills being taken away from her.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we all talked about those, you know, homeschooling heroes and all of that stuff. Did that enter your world? Was that a concern for you?
I think it probably was. I'm trying to think. I mean, I feel like I've got quite selective amnesia about everything.
Yeah, listen, I know I'm trying to drag people out of this to talk about it, but it's not easy. I appreciate that.
I mean, I think it was very difficult, especially Freya, my daughter. She was sort of what was she, 6 when it hit?
Okay,
and sort of right in the heart of kind of school and having all her mates and it kind of still being a real laugh for her at that point. So I think she really missed the social side of it. And of course, I'm sure many parents remember how difficult it was trying to work the whole online learning thing. And the teachers hadn't quite got a grip of it either. And we all felt like we were doing way too much, trying to be teachers way too much. And I fell out with Freya. Oh, did you? So many times over homework. And so yeah. I was just like, you know, I thought I would be the worst teacher. My whole family are teachers. My parents
Your
were teachers.
Your dad was a headmaster,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I was, you know, a bit 5 minutes of trying to do maths with Freya. Oh. I'd be wanting to sort of throttle her and say, how can you not see the answer is that? You know, so my admiration for teachers just went through the roof during that period because I realised how much patience they've got.
It's strange, Tom. I really admire you because the opposite happened to me, really, which was Evie was too young to be at school in age, but I tried to help my nieces out. Penny is around the age of 6, and it was trying to help her out of her maths homework that I realised that I think I am probably key stage 3 at maths. You know, it was really rather embarrassing. Like, right. I got quite reflective about, I need to have a long, hard look at myself,
yes,
you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
One of the other things, of course, is back on the agenda, which is very exciting, is live music. So many people, you know, are going to gigs again and going to festivals. And I wondered, how is that on kind of the artist side of the fence? Because from a social perspective, you know, people are getting to put their arms around their mates again and have a beer and look forward to booking tickets to that thing. Is it nice for you to be seeing other musicians or planning those gigs and knowing that you're going to see the boys and have a drink? Is that been exciting for you? Whereas possibly, and I'm not casting any aspersions against you or any other artist or band, but maybe you would have previously been just jumping into the people carrier and off site you go.
Yeah, well, this is funny because I've got a real ambivalence about performing live. Part of me adores it, and you know, and of course I've been doing it for years, and it's one of the things I do best, right? But particularly as I've got older, and I think, again, interesting enough, linking up to being a parent, I think that I've become more self-conscious about what it actually is, right? You know,
okay.
And because the way I perform is quite kind of exuberant, sort of, you know, in the Freddie Mercury mold, not quite as good as Freddie Mercury, but you know,
I've heard you do the Don't Stop Me Now vocal warm-up,
okay,
Tom, when we met a couple of years back. Doing yourself
right.
Down, very good.
But you know, I'm of that sort of, I have that exuberant nature on stage, and sometimes I think to myself, what am I doing? I'm too old to be prancing around like this, you know, showing off effectively, which is what it is. You know, you kind of, once you've got kids, you kind of want to hand that responsibility over to them.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that has this kind of slight anxiety about it, and particularly because there was that big gap about, you know, we've been suddenly, we left, we were in America when COVID really hit, so we had to fly back in the middle of a tour, and so then we had 2 or 3 years of nothing.
Yeah.
And so I had this kind of anxiety about going on back on stage, and it kind of built and built and built. I thought, do you know what, I'm not sure I'm that worried if I never have to do it again. You know, and then of course, as soon as I got out there, I was hanging out with the other lads from Keane, and we did all these gigs that have been pushed back to mostly this summer. Actually, I've really loved it.
Yeah,
and love showing off again, and love being out there.
Well, the fans will love hearing that. Have your family seen you perform live? I mean, I presume your partner's come along over the years, but has there been a particular gig or festival where you thought this is an ideal time to bring my two kind of worlds together?
It's very difficult to do. My wife, we've been together nearly 20 years, but she came in the early success of Keane. She came to America thinking this will be great. I'll go on the tour bus and hang out with the guys for a few weeks.
Right, okay.
Within about 3 days, she'd had enough. So bored.
Oh, did you try and keep up the illusion of? No. It's like we're now driving for 700 miles. We're going to play some cards. You're either in or you're out.
Yeah, exactly. And we're now in this massive shed on the edge of town, and you've got to sit on the bus all day and hang around until we do our thing and then come off stage all excited. Yeah, I mean,
But we've got a sound check at one, so you've got that to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm afraid that was the last of the tours that she came on. I mean, she likes coming to see us play live every now and then.
Of course.
But as in terms of my children, I mean, yeah, Gabriel is the youngest. He's too young.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have a clue what was going on. But Freya, she came to Glastonbury a few years ago. I played on the acoustic stage. And she came along to that. Marty Pellow was on before us.
Okay.
And for some reason, he overran by about an hour.
Marty Pellow overran at Glastonbury by an hour. I just wasn't expecting that sentence to be uttered on the dad pod today, Tom.
Well, there we go. But and I could see, I was looking at Freya and she was getting more and more, because I was thinking, right, you know, it was like a 7 or 8 o'clock gig. So I was thinking, she'll be all right. She'll be able to stay awake. She'll enjoy. And I could see her as Marty Pellow was, you know, singing Love Is All Around. She was beginning to look a little bit drowsy. And so the one time when she's had an opportunity to see us, she slept in the sound desk. By the sound desk, she slept through the entire gig. So
ruined by wet. I mean, my goodness.
He's got a lot to answer for.
When you are away from the family, and I understand the complexities of making all of that work, you've explained them brilliantly. Is that a time when you really, really miss the kids? Or is it a time when, you know, where this is going, you get to go up to your hotel room, you put your little key card in, and you're like, ah, bliss.
It's like going on holiday.
I laugh. Someone had the guts to say it.
I even said it on stage the other night. I mean, to be serious about it, like, I feel like I've worked really hard to balance my life these days. And I could go out on the road the whole time. I could be recording, making new records. I could be one of those really absent musical dads, and I know there are a lot of them out there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people in the entertainment industry, they sacrifice a lot of their home life. But I feel like I've really worked hard to make sure there's a balance. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, it's a compromise on both sides. You know, I'm aware that every time I go away, it's kind of damaging for my kids and for family life. But on the other hand, you know, I get to go on holiday. No, I'm bringing home the bacon, and I'm sort of, you know, getting to do something that makes me a happy person. So I think it's a really difficult balance to strike. And I think you have to, certainly after a while, I think you have to accept that it's, you have to probably give them more time than you want to. I don't know. You just have to sacrifice a bit more of your own selfishness for them.
When you're kicking off your shoes, you're laying on your hotel bed, you need to know in your mind's eye that you have spent enough time and been loving enough of your kids that this is absolutely fine.
And
also as well, I suppose it becomes about, and you talk about bringing home the bacon, and it's not just you're providing for the family, but also you're providing based on the fact that millions of people around the world want to hear you. They want to see you. You have to provide for your fans as well.
Right.
And then there's the balancing act.
Yeah.
And that's when, and I'd be interested to know, you need a great partner.
Yeah.
You need someone who is going to be there and understands why you are not there on those occasions. And I suppose you need to, that's why the Glastonbury thing, even though Marty Pellow ruined it, it's quite nice for Freya to see why Daddy's away.
Yeah.
And why he's going to be away for a prolonged amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, for her, it's been quite abstract up until quite recently, you know, because it's just that's how she thinks, oh, Daddy's on TV sometimes and Daddy's on stage sometimes. So for her, it's normal or has appeared to be normal. But I think she's now starting to realise that, oh, it's quite an odd thing that Daddy does that for a job. It's not like run of the mill. And obviously she's still getting nudged by her friends at school. Oh, so you saw your dad on The Masked Singer or whatever it might be, you know. I think she's trying to sort of come to terms probably with that, with how strange that is. But yes, I mean, as you say, any chance to try and sort of include her in our strange little bubble is probably a good thing. Yeah.
And I think as well, for her development as a person, it's nice that she thinks it's strange.
Yeah.
You know, you would imagine there are a lot of kind of stars in this world whose children don't understand why this is unusual or this is odd. And I think it shows decent grounding and parenting for them to be aware that it's unusual.
I know of artists, I'm not mentioning any names,
no,
but they who kind of take their kids around the world with them on tour buses. And I just don't think that's a healthy environment for kids to be living in at all, really. And it's, so I think keeping the two things quite separate, and as I said earlier, you know, making sure you commit enough to your home life is really important. Mm-hmm.
So So let's talk Masked Singer, because a hugely popular show, and that in itself is a reason to do it. You sounded great. You looked incredible, by the way. I can't believe you're wearing the outfit now for this still, Tom.
I can't let go of it, to be honest.
But I read, and whether this is true or not, that you did it because your daughter was a fan of the show and her friends were, and you were looking forward to that moment. Is there any truth in that?
There's definitely some truth in that, yeah. I mean, I think the it's such a crackers concept, and I think my wife and I and Freya had we don't normally watch Saturday night TV, but I think probably pandemic related we'd been in more, and so we'd seen the Masked Singer, and Nat, my wife, said, she said, you know, would you ever go on it? And I said, I probably would, because it's kind of different enough, and to me at least, it doesn't seem a kind of desperate attempt to sort of squeeze
great
the last
Saturday night
bits
fun.
Out of your career. You know, yeah. it's just fun. And obviously, if you've got kids, you know, I mean, hopefully they're going to have a blast watching it. So, but here's the thing. I mean, Freya watched it and she enjoyed it. And we all enjoyed it together. And I thought, right, well, okay, if they ask, I'll do it. And they did ask. And as it turned out, when it then came on the TV, obviously it films a few months before it comes out, so I knew exactly what was going to happen to me, and so we would put it on. We didn't want to say to Frey, like,
because you've got to keep it.
Let's sit down and watch The Masked Singer. You know, we just kind of had it on in the background. She could not have been more disinterested.
Oh no, no.
She kind of moved on from The Masked Singer.
Oh wow. You know?
So it was a bit of a struggle, sort of, to try and get her watching it, and she had when she did, she had absolutely no idea that it was me in the poodle outfit, and in fact, because I mean, we just thought it would be so obvious. Firstly, my voice, and secondly, my wife's obsessed with poodles. You know, we've got a kind of mixed breed now, but it's you know, dogs are a big part of our
poodles
lives.
A big thing. Okay,
and so we just thought, Freya, she'll put two and two together. And she didn't at all. And so it got to the week where I was about to be voted out, and I had to sit her down and say, now, look, you know the poodle on The Masked Singer? She was like, I was like, that's me. And she just looked at me like with a sort of thousand-yard stare, as though, what is he talking about? You know, this man is a lunatic. And I sort of, then had to explain to her that it was me. It was me.
And I did it for you.
I did it for you. And this is the week where I get voted out, you know. Because I thought she probably needed to know that, and then she proceeded to cry.
Oh no! Oh goodness me, Tom.
What I was kind of hoping would come out of The Masked Singer in terms of my family, it didn't materialise in the way I expected. But there we go.
Were our friends excited? Did you get any reports from school? At least there must be some light at the end of this tunnel.
Once the show had aired. Yeah. Where I got knocked out and was obviously revealed. Then she had some bragging rights and her mates had enjoyed it, and it was quite exciting for them all. So there was a little tiny payoff at the end.
Well, it's a lovely thing to do. Tom, it's great to see you here, and it's great to hear you talk about, you know, kind of touring and being a family man and getting the balance right, and, you know, the news of some new music, a solo project coming, you know, this year is really exciting for myself and all of the fans. And one of the reasons it's so great to see you doing so well is you've had some difficult times. You've had some personal battles. Yeah. And you told the Telegraph newspaper that your wife and your daughter were hugely helpful during this time. Can you tell us about the positive impact that they had?
Well, I think they sharpened my focus, basically.
Okay.
I mean, so 2014 was the year Freya was born. And my problems with addiction had been, you know, in and out of my life for many years by that point. And so, that year, whilst it had many highlights and many periods of sobriety, 2014 when she was born, it was also the worst. We saw some of the worst patches of my addictive behaviour, and I was quite quickly killing myself. I think that was the truth of it. I was physically an absolute ruin, and I was just not present, and I could just see, or I could start to sense the effect that was having on my wife, and certainly, I mean, even it's interesting because my wife's a psychotherapist, and part of her speciality is dealing with attachment, which is a side of psychotherapy that's sort of gained a lot of traction. And you know, a guy called John Bowlby, who's a very sort of profound thinker, and you know, so this notion that everything that a baby sees in its first 6 months of life is absolutely integral to how it turns out as an adult. You know, these things are really important. All the mirroring and the early attachments that you make to a kid. And so I could see that this was not going well from my point of view. I mean, I was either very present or I was completely absent. You know, and I think when you've got drugs knocking around the house, when you've got a small child there, it's just, you know, it's just completely unworkable.
Yeah.
And so what happened was I started just running away more and more. And these patches where I would go on, these binges would get longer and longer and longer. And by the end of that year, it had come to the point where my wife had said to me, I'm now looking for a new place to live and I'm going to take Freya with me. And I think that combined with a sense of just total physical and mental exhaustion and a feeling that I just had enough, the knowledge of all that, and I suppose in some ways the positive side, which was, hang on, if I get well and I get healthy, then I can actually be all the things that I really truly believe I am and I want to be, and so it all ended in I was staying at a friend's house. He'd kind of give me the keys. He wasn't there. And I'd been there for like 3 or 4 days using drugs. And I basically thought I was about to keel over and die. And I thought, if I wake up tomorrow morning, then I'm going to turn over a new leaf. And that is something a lot of addicts say to themselves a lot. And it never happens.
No.
Or it's, you know.
Breaking the cycle of addiction is something that, unfortunately, some people never realise.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an incredible thing they do. So were you able to do that, Tom?
Well,
is that what happened?
Funnily enough, but I just knew in my head. It's like, I think you suddenly realise, oh, yes, I am going to do this now. And no one else believed me. Like, they'd heard it all before. Oh, you're going to start. Oh, right, okay, yeah, we'll believe that. And we'll see it. But that, you know, that was 8 years ago now.
Yeah. And not particularly helpful. Not that you're expecting a great deal from a circle of people. You know, leaning into them is important and looking for support, but, you know.
Yeah. You've let them down so many times. Yeah. You have to just prove
And if you're
it.
Able to, you can afford to put yourself somewhere away from everybody for a few days and you're that way inclined and that's what you're going to do because, you know, the blinkers are on, then that's the sad thing, isn't it? There's not really much that can be done.
You can love them, try not to judge them. But it's very hard, you know, because they let you down and they destroy stuff and that, you know, there's we're a kind of destructive breed, addicts. Thankfully, in my case, I was able to stop it before it killed me. But I think, you know, very often it doesn't, and it totally takes either just completely destroys a person's life or kills them, and that's kind of the worst thing, and I'm very glad I skirted that. And I feel, you know, it's interesting because I feel sort of since 2015, my whole life has been completely different. Like, it's been full of opportunities, full of just this. I mean, all that energy that you pour into kind of being a surreptitious, sneaky drug user, suddenly it can all go somewhere positive, right? You know, you realise, wow, I really was using a lot of energy for something very negative, and now I can turn it something positive. So, you know, I feel like I can just about do all the things I want to do. You know, try and be a good husband, a good dad, try and write songs, you know, do good live shows, and go fishing and play golf. Like, the things that I love.
Yeah.
You know, they might not bring you wild highs or wild lows like the addiction did, but they just, you know, it's like a kind of little wave that just sort of meanders along, and you can just, life feels manageable and simple. And I mean, I personally would much prefer that now than going back down the mine again.
Well done for you, Tom. I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, you'd mentioned previously, I read that, you know, you said that this experience had coloured your life, and it's, you know, that's an interesting way of looking at things, because what you're saying now is you know how that all feels.
Yeah.
You're not talking about that person as some, you know, a dark days that you don't want to talk about. You're looking at, like, I remember the highs. I certainly remember the lows. I know that I wasn't around. And now, because of all of that stuff, I'm enjoying life a lot better. I'm a, I'm a better husband. I'm a better friend, a better musician, a better father.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, isn't it, really? You've got to just learn from your mistakes as a human being. Recognise that that's part of being human, and also accept that that's who you are as well. Like, I'm never not going to be that person who was kind of, a, you know, just, well, a lot of the time, useless disappearing act. And so I have to just... And also, it's important for me to remember that, because if I ever entertain the idea of going back down that road again, I have to be aware that that's what happens at the end of it. But yeah, I mean, it's true that it, I still wouldn't choose my life. If I had it again, I wouldn't. I still would choose my life with the addiction, because I think it's made me a better person having come through it. And I think it's funny, because a lot of addicts say that. They would rather have had it than not.
Yeah.
Because it forces you to look at yourself in a kind of almost forensic way in which you would never have done otherwise. And I found that very interesting, and it's been the inspiration for a lot of music as well, which is quite handy.
Every guest I have here on the Dad Pod over the years has imparted a piece of dad advice. Advice for parents everywhere.
Yeah,
this includes everyone from Rob Beckett to Samo Farah via Tyson Fury, Chris and Rosie Ramsey, Tim Minchin. What would your dad advice be to all of our listeners?
Well, I think my dad advice, and this is something someone told me before we had Freya, and that was, do not get competitive with your spouse about parenting, about who's done what.
Oh, I've already fallen into that trap so many times, Tom.
As soon as you feel yourself going into that place... Yeah.
Who's had the least amount of sleep here?
Exactly. I mean, hopefully, if you're in a happy relationship, you're managing that stuff, and you're both doing a lot. And it is a lot, because parenting is an insane responsibility. and so, of course, you are going to be divvying up the responsibilities. So it's important that you just accept that you're both doing loads, and and never use it as a weapon, particularly because I think the worst thing is when the kids start to hear that stuff. Because it, you know, what does that make a kid think about, you know, how you feel about them?
Mm.
Oh, they're arguing about who's looked after me the most this week, or who's had to get up and, you know, play with my toys with me, you know, and that, I think, has a very negative effect on the way a kid feels about their parents, and also as an example of a relationship. And that is another thing you're doing. You're trying to set an example of what a good relationship is to your kids. So I think, yes, that would be my advice. Don't get competitive.
Very good advice, Tom. I wish I'd learned it about 3.5 years ago now.
Oh, I mean, I still thought I'd still disobey my own rules. Don't worry. But, you know, so long as you can kind of keep it as a mantra, I think it is important to remind yourself.
Yeah, it's a good one. It really is. Now, we all know about the concept of the dad joke, but I also like to ask all of my guests, what do your kids do that make you laugh? Are they particularly, you know, sarcastic? Are they kind of clowning around? Do they call you silly names? What is it?
Well, Gabriel, see, this is the thing. So we've got an 8-year-old and a 2-year-old, and that is a big age gap. And it's in those 6 years, I had forgotten all of the bad stuff about bringing up an infant. I mean, and also, I mean, I don't want to get into gender stereotyping, but based on my own analysis, Freya, as a toddler, seemed somewhat easier than Gabriel, who, I mean, I'm not joking. Literally, I would say between 5 and 10 seconds of turning your back on him is all you've got before he's doing something stupid, and it is like. I don't know, it's like he's got like parts of his body sort of twitch in the direction of danger.
Yeah. And he's over the knife section of the dishwasher just hovering his palm there.
Also, one thing I was thinking today, because I got up with him this morning, you know, it's a silly o'clock, and I was thinking to myself, never buy something that you, or well, put anything that you cherish into storage for the duration of the first 4 or 5 years of their lives. For example, we bought a... some people might think this is awful, but we bought a velvet, yellow velvet sofa, right? Just after he was born. I don't know why we did this.
We bought a pink velvet sofa. That's why I'm laughing, because I feel your pain.
And it was all there. And we said, right, you kids, you've got to be really careful with this new sofa. As when something's new, you know, you always like that. Well, anyway, as soon as he started going to nursery, he goes to nursery for like, he does a day and a half a week. And literally every week since lockdowns were over, he's come back with a new illness. And it's normally just a kind of, it's just exploding out of his face.
Yeah.
And he started to use this yellow velvet sofa.
Has he got those little kind of poof cushions?
Yeah. And literally wiping his face in it this. And then we put a cover on it.
Yeah.
And he'd look at you and he'd pull up the cover and he'd, I mean, honestly, he's got it in for that sofa. There are two other sofas in the room. He doesn't touch them. He knows that sofa is precious to me, and he's just gradually destroying it.
We bought the pink velvet sofa. Yeah. Again, people listening to this may think that's an error in itself, but it was a beautiful piece of furniture in our eyes, and it went along with the other stuff that was in the room, which isn't pink. But thinking about it when we got it and unwrapped it, and thinking about it now, 2 years later, we have to have the sitting cushion bit up the other way because Evie has totally destroyed. So then we have to put cushions in key areas because you can see the zip cushion where you would, in theory, unzip it so you could get it dry cleaned, which we've done countless times.
Yeah.
In dry cleaning alone, I think we've doubled the amount of money we've spent on that sofa when we originally got it.
Right. I think you've just got to... You've just got to accept that there's going to be kind of, you know, the pouches that they have. Do you have those pouches? I mean, the amount of, like, I don't know, squished up vegetable juice that I find on the walls of our house. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And in the carpets and on the sofa. Yeah. I mean, I just wonder how they actually manage it. How have they got the time to put it everywhere? But they seem to. And so I think you've just got to think to yourself, well, you know, maybe once... Well, this is the thing. I feel like I'm actually looking forward to them flying the nest. I'm going to be honest.
Wow. Just going for it. No messing about. Tom, tell us as it is. I've got a great question coming up, which I can't wait to ask you now.
The thing is, I am a bit neurotic about, like, tidiness and the house being kind of looking sharp and nicely painted, and as we discussed, the yellow velvet. So I am neurotic about all that stuff, and I am having to really repress a lot of feelings at this point in my life when it comes to my neurosis about the house. And so I'm just thinking, I do sometimes think, oh, you know, people do complain about them flying the nest, but I'm actually wondering whether I'm quite looking forward to it so that we can decorate the house and then it'll be fine.
And it'll be done. See, I am exactly the same. And my sister, who's two kids, my nieces, are 10 and 6. She saw me running around, pink velvet sofa, turning the cushions, worrying about steering Evie over here. And she just watched this for a while. She was over at the house. She said, you've got to stop fighting this battle, David. It's a battle you're never going to win. And I've still not given up the fight, I must admit. Yeah. But
I totally agree with that sentiment, yes.
So this is, given that you just said you can't wait for him to fly the nest, this is always the heartwarming bit of the podcast, the final question, which is, your kids hear this back in 15 years from now, what would you like to say to them? Why haven't you gone yet? No, I'm kidding.
I think that's probably it. No, I don't know what I would say to them if they were listening to this in 15 years. I suppose, I think, you know, we've captured a lot of their behaviour on film. So I think if they think that when they're sort of 18 or whatever, that they can somehow kind of whitewash over what happened when they were kids, they're wrong. So just, I think I'm telling that to them now. Just remember that we have footage, we have evidence to prove that you were horrible pieces of work.
Tom Chaplin, that has been one of my most enjoyable episodes of the Dad Pod that I've ever been part of. So thank you for your time.
Thanks, Dave.
I'm so excited about hearing some new music, and I'm so pleased that we got to talk about your family. And I thank you for being so open and honest, and so hilariously funny as well. You're welcome back anytime, Tom. See you soon.
I'd love to. Thanks, Dave.
The wonderful, informative and very entertaining Tom Chaplin there. As always, a follow, like, subscribe, nice comment and review for the Dad Pod wherever you get your podcast is much appreciated. And don't forget, you can always get in touch with me via my Instagram, which is Dave_Berry_Insta, or email daveberrydadpod@gmail.com. My Dad Pod will be back with another episode and another fascinating guest very soon. Until then, thanks again for listening.